Welcome to the Spiritual Lifestyle Podcast, formerly known as Chapters of Motherhood. I'm your host, Veronica Moss, and I've returned with an evolved vision. I'm currently in studio passionately crafting brand new episodes set to officially debut in the spring of 2024. We now focus on promoting spiritual growth in all areas of life, including career, relationships, and mindful parenting. While you're waiting for the new season to kick off, why not revisit some of the classics? We've got your favorite episodes from Chapters of Motherhood lined up for your enjoyment. So sit back, relax, and let the Spiritual Lifestyle Podcast lead you on a journey of self-discovery and growth. Stay tuned. Welcome to your renewed spiritual sanctuary, the Spiritual Lifestyle Podcast. Welcome, everybody, back to Chapters of Motherhood Podcast. Today, I am joined by Christy and Jenny, the host of Cheesecake and Crying Podcast, to talk about their motherhood journeys and struggles during maternity leave and how they came up with the idea of Cheesecake and Crying. Hi, ladies.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. How's everybody? Hi. Still on maternity leave?
Still on maternity leave, yep.
Yeah, here in Canada, we have a year or more, so I know that can be probably different than what some of your listeners are probably.
Yeah, that's nice. Here in California, you'll be lucky to get 6 weeks. And if you apply for the additional 6 weeks family leave, so all we get is about 3 months.
Yeah.
But a year or more, that sounds great.
It's pretty great. I can't complain. That's for sure. It's pretty great. We feel very fortunate to have that.
Yes. Okay. We do want to clarify, though, that mat leave is not a vacation.
No.
Some people might get the impression.
Yeah.
It's like, rather than working, 8 hour days, 40 hour weeks, it's more like you're just working 24 hours a day. So
we always say all moms are working moms, because whether you're on mat leave or you're a stay at home mom, or you are a mom who works from home or works outside the home, all moms are pretty much always working all the time.
Yeah.
At one job or another.
Yes, I agree. So how many children do you have?
We each have two. Actually, it's funny because we like to joke that we are mind twins and we do everything together. And we ended up not planned in any way, but we ended up both of our pregnancies, we were pregnant at the same time through both of our pregnancies, and we had boys first about 3 months apart. And then 2 years later, we both had girls and they're a month apart.
Oh, wow. That's really lucky. That's nice to have that kind of friendship where the kids are also the same age and growing up together and the same gender. That's awesome.
Yeah,
God, so I'm jealous, actually.
Yeah, they're pretty much forced best friends, whether they like it or not.
And that kind of dynamic is one of the reasons that we ended up deciding to, we'll talk about it probably later, but to start our podcast was because we recognize that that is lucky. Not a lot of people get to have one or even both or more pregnancies. And mat leaves at the same time as a friend. And what we have with each other, we realize that talking to other mom friends and just hearing other people's stories, not everybody has that. And so we thought, this could be kind of a fun experience and maybe we could be there for other people who don't have somebody to kind of chat with and vent to and look to for tips and tricks of motherhood and mat leave and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we basically, we all know, we've all heard about the village and how it takes a village, and that is obviously lost in today's society. And so we sort of thought, social media and the internet and everything, just the age we live in, it's just a completely different dynamic. And so a podcast is sort of one way that we can, sort of create and foster that mom tribe, that community, and kind of rebuild our own version of the village, right? So all about supporting other moms. As you are.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah, that's kind of the reason why I started mine as well, thinking, I know I'm not the only one who's going through this and someone can relate to my story.
Exactly.
All right. So did Jen want to go ahead and talk about your experience so far with motherhood? You experienced postpartum depression?
Yes. And, you know, the first time around was, well, I'm not going to say it was easy. I guess in hindsight, now having two children and looking back, it seems easy, but it, you know, it's not when you're in it. But I guess you could say it was relatively, I don't know what the right word is, maybe not uneventful, but definitely this second time has been a lot more challenging. My daughter was colicky, which I guess is just a catch-all term when they just cry all the time and you don't really know why. But yeah, we'll call it colicky. And that has been a challenge, obviously. And just dealing with the two kids and, you know, I mean, those are certain circumstances, but of course, we don't know exactly what causes postpartum depression and anxiety. I have dealt with some of these issues, you know, before, like just growing up and in my adult life. So I guess I'm just more predisposed to it, but it's been interesting. I know that.
So just to clarify, you've dealt with depression separately from anxiety prior to having children.
Yeah, more so the anxiety, I would say, but I guess depression too. Like I've gone through bouts of it, you know, which I feel is pretty like normal. Like I feel like most people I talk to have, you know, dealt with some sort of mental health challenge at one time or another. So, but yeah, definitely anxiety is something that I have struggled with for a long time. And, you know, just sort of when you're going through it and you're in that postpartum and you kind of tend to blame everything on hormones or, oh, I'm just tired, I'm exhausted. It's, you kind of just, you know, push it aside because you're busy dealing with your children and you're being a mother and you're, you know, you barely have time to shower, eat, like self-care is not a thing. So you sort of put yourself on the back burner and it was starting to get to the point where I realized like, this is not normal. This is more than just, you know, hormones or more than just a tiredness. And just talking to people like Christy, for example, and this is why, another reason why just going back to, you know, building that village and having that support, it's so important to have people in your life that you do feel comfortable talking to about some of the thoughts and feelings that you're having, because as you were saying, chances are if you're going through it, someone else is too. And it's good to know that, you know, we're not alone in this because it is tough. And sometimes we need a little help, which I am in the process of getting now. So I'm trying to stay positive and just, I'm taking it one day at a time. I know that sounds so cliche, but that's really all you can do. So
yes, one day at a time is exactly the way it needs to be done. How long did you feel the symptoms before you felt that you needed help?
Well, my daughter is about just over 9 months now. So it's just been in the last month or so where I've finally sort of taken the steps to getting help, talking to my doctor. I've actually started medication. I have a yoga background, and so I sort of thought it was something, and I'm always preaching about self-care, and so I sort of thought it was something that I could manage on my own, like, oh, I have these tools, I know how to meditate, and I just need to take time for myself, and I, you know, kind of thought that it was something that I could beat by myself, and then it just got to the point where I realized that it was getting worse instead of better. Especially considering I don't have that time to just, you know, go and have time to myself whenever I want. It's not as easy compared to somebody who, say, doesn't have children, right? We can't just go and have a bubble bath with a glass of wine whenever we want, or, you know, it's harder to take that time for self-care. So I just realized that it's sort of one of those things where as a mom, we tend to kind of almost have that martyr mentality where it's like, oh, we have to put our kids first and we sort of are self-sacrificing. But when it comes to maternal mental health, taking care of ourselves is one of the best things that we can do for our children.
And a lot of people still will chalk it up to just hormones. Oh, it's just hormones. Or this is my second time around. This is silly. You know, things like that. Or I thought it was going to be a lot easier having two kids rather than one. And it's, you know, it's a lot harder. So you start blaming yourself. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Definitely there's so much shame and guilt in motherhood. And we, like Christy and I talk about this all the time too, and just like how it's so silly and unnecessary. And why do we do it to ourselves? And it's one of those things too, where, you know, we're so quick to like, if Christy says something that she might be feeling mom guilt about, and it's like, I'll be the first to tell her like, oh no, don't be ridiculous. But then we don't have that same attitude toward ourselves.
Now, you mentioned that you're seeking treatment. You're doing talk therapy.
So my doctor's actually thinks that I need to, I mean, therapy is something definitely that I'll be looking into down the road. But for now, I'm on medication just to sort of
balance everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, are you breastfeeding?
I am.
Okay. Yeah, I've done a little bit of research on that. And, you know, when you're pregnant, your hormones are off the chart. And then as soon as you deliver, they have a sudden drop. So that's why the hormones are all off. And you do experience those baby blues. And for some people, it goes straight into depression. But also when you're breastfeeding, those hormones are still unbalanced, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So it could extend the maternal mental health issue. Just throwing it out there. I learned that recently. So
no, that's really interesting. Actually, Christy, we were just talking about breastfeeding hormones the other day and how we think it could be a contributing factor to our moods. So that's interesting that there is some science behind that.
Right. So is there any other awareness that you want to raise with your experience?
I think the main thing is, like I said, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup. So if you are feeling these feelings of overwhelm and frustration and rage and sadness and the anxiety, all of these things I was experiencing, first of all, it is normal. Like, we need to normalize mental health in general, and especially in postpartum and maternal mental health. Moms are important. We are important. You are important. And if you're going through these challenges, the best thing that you can do for your children is to get help. And if that starts by even just talking to someone you love, like whether it's your partner or your best friend, or, you know, talking to your doctor, like just starting that conversation, I think we are, you know, it is becoming more normalized. People are being more open about it. And I try to be candid about it. I talk about it on my social media. I talk about it all the time because it, you know, it's something that we shouldn't shy away from it. We need to bring more awareness to it. That's the only way that you're going to get better. Right. So.
Right. And it's not something that's going to go on away on its own. It's not something that, oh, you know, as soon as you're done breastfeeding or when you go back to work, everything will go better for you. It's not something that's just going to magically disappear. You do need to get help for it. And you do need your family members aware of your mood, because a lot of the times the person in the eye of the storm won't notice what's going on. And it's usually a spouse or a mom or a parent or a loved one, a friend that will recognize, hey, there's something wrong and I want to help you. You got to be open to that help. They're not criticizing you. They want to help you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I did have people in my life, like my husband and like Christy and other people who were, you know, sort of gently pointing that out and kind of nudging me in the right direction. And I think, too, it's important to mention that we know moms tend to put a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure put on moms in general from external sources, like from society and social media, and the pressure that we put on ourselves.
Yes.
And I think that we have this persona that we have to be super moms and we have to have our, you know, have it all together at all times. And if we ask for help or if we admit that we are failing in some way, that we, you know, we will be deemed a bad mother, and that's just ridiculous. So that's another stigma that we need to, you know, that needs to go away.
Totally agree. Yes. Let's not put that extra pressure. We got too much pressure on us already. Let's not put on that extra pressure on ourselves.
Exactly.
Did Christy want to go ahead and jump in?
Yeah. Sorry, Jen, she was doing a great job at explaining.
Yes.
Everything. I didn't want to interrupt, but just to Jenny's point about, and your point about having people around you. And that's kind of also with Cheesecake and Crying, having our village. I think it took, a little bit of a nudge. And I'm glad that Jen and I have the relationship that we do. She's pretty self-aware, and she was aware of, I think, some of the warning signs for what she was going through. But I think it's, like you said, it's important to be open, and it was good to be able to be there for her and sort of remind her that I said this to her probably 100 times, like, you deserve to feel good. You deserve to feel your best. Like, don't do this for, I mean, obviously you want to do it for your kids and you want to do it for your husband and for your friends and your family. And you think that you need to be better for all of us, but I want you to feel good. Like, you deserve to feel good. You deserve to not feel this way. And I think moms sometimes forget that you deserve that. Like, forget everybody else for a second. You have to put yourself first and recognize that you first deserve all the good and all the best.
Right. I agree.
Me too.
Christy, did you want to go ahead and talk about your motherhood journey?
Yeah. So mine's been a little different than Jen's. I would say some of my bigger challenges have been physical with my motherhood journey. So I have experienced a little bit of postpartum anxiety with both of my pregnancies. And I mean, not to undermine that, that has been very challenging. But I think some of my bigger challenges came more on the physical side, especially with my first pregnancy. I would say I've mostly been a pretty, you know, active and healthy person most of my adult life. And like Jen said, she is, she has a yoga background, as do I. And so I kind of had this image, I don't know, maybe from media or just from watching celebrities be pregnant. It looks very breezy and easy. And you see, you know, these leggy Victoria's Secret models pop out babies, and it seems very, all very cute and, you know, light. And I sort of expected, I'm not really totally sure why, but I expected that that was going to be that way for me, that I was just going to breeze through pregnancy and that I was going to feel great and that I was going to snap right back and feel back to myself. And that was very much not the case. With my first pregnancy, I had actually with both of my pregnancies, but with my first pregnancy, I had it more significantly, which was placenta previa. I don't know if you know what that is or not, but in case listeners don't know what that is, it's basically when your placenta is covering your cervix. So ultimately where the baby has to come out, your placenta is blocking it. And it's not totally uncommon. I think I talked to a lot of other moms after the fact and realized it's more common that my doctor had kind of made me think it was. And it's not necessarily dangerous per se, but it can be. And so I found out at my 20-week scan that I had with my first pregnancy with my son, a fully blocked cervix. And in order to deliver naturally, or naturally is the wrong word, vaginally, it needed to move out of the way and be completely unblocked from the cervix by at least 2 centimeters. And this was all really new to me, and it kind of took me a little bit by surprise. I don't know why. It's just, I expected everything to just be fine. And with the placenta previa came some restrictions. So pelvic rest, which meant no sex, which, I mean, at that point I was pretty much fine with. I don't know about my husband.
Right. But one of you was happy about that. The other one was
yeah,
not.
Exactly. It also meant I couldn't exercise anything past, you know, light walking or anything like that. And that was okay. I was a little bit worried about it. My doctor was pretty strict about the fact that placenta previa isn't a problem until it's a problem. So if I had any bleeding or, you know, any contractions or anything like that that felt abnormal, that it was an emergency rather than a wait and see. Because as you can imagine, I'm sure, or as listeners can imagine, if you happen to have any kind of preterm labor or anything like that, if the place where the baby has to come out is blocked, that's a big problem and would require an emergency C-section. So with it being my first pregnancy and being so, everything is new, obviously, when it's your first pregnancy, I was really scared. And that kind of threw off the journey for me a little bit. And that was okay up until about I think it was about 25, 26 weeks pregnant with that pregnancy. And I started to have, I remember very specifically, I was at work. I work in human resources and I was going to conduct interviews and I had all these papers in my hand and I'm rushing across. I work at a college. So I was rushing across the campus and I just started to have what I didn't realize at the time because I'd never felt them before, but was ultimately contractions and like stopped me in my tracks, like some of the worst pain that I'd ever felt. So I kind of made it back to my office and my boss suggested that they take me to the hospital, especially based on what my doctor had told me. And when I got there, they hooked me up to the monitors and said, yes, I was in fact having contractions, but after a lot of tests determined that I was okay to go home, but they put me on bed rest. And I ended up being on bed rest the rest of my pregnancy. I won't bore you with all of the details, but that was really, really challenging for me. I was at home on bed rest to the point where, you know, I could obviously get up to go to the washroom and do those things, but I was supposed to be resting pretty much the entire rest of my pregnancy, which was still almost 3 months. Right. And so some of the physical challenges like additional weight gain, swelling, soreness just from, you know, laying down, as crazy as that sounds. But obviously, if anybody out there has ever been pregnant, you know that that's super uncomfortable after a certain point.
Yeah.
That all was just, it really was such a surprise and a shock to me. And it ended up being so much more physically challenging than I ever imagined. So as your belly grows, the placenta does move. And in this case, the placenta did move. And I found out I think it was 37 or 38 weeks that I could try and deliver vaginally. And I did, and it ended up being successful and everything worked out in the end. But that just sort of was, I guess, the challenge for me was to overcome. I don't know what the right word is, but I guess I had thought that things were going to be a certain way. And when they weren't, it was a struggle for me mentally to sort of rectify that in my brain as to this wasn't how I pictured it. And then when my second pregnancy happened, they had told me that the chance of having placenta previa a second time was like less than 1%. And so I was feeling pretty okay with it. I mean, it all ended up working out fine, but ultimately I didn't want to have that experience again where potential for bed rest, I had to be off work. It was, I mean, bed rest sounds fun now that I've had two kids. I would love for someone Amen. To force me. Yeah, I would love for someone right. to force me to lay in bed, but it actually is not very fun. It's very boring and very lonely and challenging. And if you can't work, it's also, you know, potentially financially difficult as well. Anyways, so when I went in for my 20-week scan with my daughter, I was pretty much assuming that I wouldn't have it again. And turns out that I did have it again. This time, however, the block was very minimal and it ended up moving within a few weeks. So whereas with my first pregnancy, I didn't get the all clear until about 38 weeks. This time, I think by about 24 or 25 weeks when I had my second follow-up scan, everything was fine. However, I did learn as I got into my third trimester that those contractions that I had the first time weren't just like a fluke or a one-time pregnancy thing. And I always mess up how to say this, but it's prodromal or prodromal or something like that labor. And basically, I'm just somebody who's prone to having contractions. And they're not necessarily strong enough to dilate you in the beginning, but they are stronger than Braxton Hicks. So it's super painful. And also you never really, really know when you're going into labor. Right. So it, you know, I was at work through my second pregnancy multiple times. They didn't put me on bed rest this time because my placenta previa had already cleared by the time all this started. So I was uncomfortable with all the contractions that were going on, but it wasn't necessarily risky by that point. And so like multiple times I would end up in triage thinking that I was potentially going into labor and, you know, they would hook me up and it turns out that I wasn't. And my daughter ended up, my second pregnancy, she ended up actually being late, of course. But just that whole experience was really physically challenging. I mean, the contractions were really intense at some points, and this went on for months and months and months. And so while I was kind of lucky to have relatively uncomplicated births, the pregnancy was very physically challenging for me.
Okay. And did you feel any anxiety into your second pregnancy?
I did. But because they had said, you know, there's a less than 1% chance that you would have placenta previa again. And because I'd only been pregnant once prior, there was no, I never thought that I would have that contraction issue again. I don't know why. But I just didn't think it would be the same. And so I'm not planning on having a third child, but if I did, or if I were to get pregnant again, I think I would have a lot more anxiety going into the pregnancy, knowing that I'm prone to these kinds of things, because it's painful. It sucked.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can relate a little bit with my second pregnancy with my daughter. I was just under so much stress that I was having, I thought they were breast and Hicks as well, but I don't think they were that strong as you're describing. They're somewhere in between the middle. Yeah. And it was just due to stress though. Mm-hmm. And they just called them false contractions.
Yeah.
So I can understand, but they weren't as strong as what you're describing. So it was probably just Braxton Hicks.
Hey, Braxton Hicks can be painful.
People
say that they're not supposed to be painful, but I think that they've obviously never felt them because they can be painful.
Right. Can I just say, all these people that say things like, oh, Braxton Hicks aren't painful. Oh, breastfeeding shouldn't hurt. Like all these things that people say. And it's like, you know, can we just be real? Like, yeah, Braxton Hicks suck. Breastfeeding hurts in the beginning. Like all of these things that it's like, it's like the whole like, oh, we're all super moms, right? It's like, oh yeah, everything's fine. No, it's all great. It doesn't hurt. It's fine. And instead of just being real and talking about how most of the stuff that we go through while pregnant and childbirth and postpartum, it's not all, I mean, yes, you get a cute, snuggly baby in the end, hopefully, right? But it's not all like fun and sunshine and roses when you're going through it. So,
yes, exactly. Just because it's natural doesn't mean it's easy. It hurts. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was going to say that I can also relate with bed rest, because with my fourth baby, I started getting Braxton Hicks at 16 weeks and every day. And it got to the point where it's like, am I in labor or am I not in labor?
Yeah.
And I was put on bed rest as well, but they gave me medication to stop contractions at 35 weeks. Did they give you medication?
They didn't, because they were watching me closely enough to determine that the contractions weren't like making any headway. My first pregnancy, when I went actually into labor, I was only about a centimeter and a half, 2 centimeters dilated. And I was 39 weeks at that point. So they were watching me pretty closely. We talked about the potential for medication. And before the placenta previa had cleared, we also talked about the potential to have a C-section early, because if I went into labor before the previa had cleared, it would be like an emergency and potentially life-threatening situation. So we talked about a number of different options, but they monitored me really carefully. I think normally you go once a month, at least here in Canada, for your first, what is it? You guys probably know better, seven, eight months, you go once a month, and then you start going every 2 weeks, and then you go every week in your ninth month of pregnancy to see your OB. But I was going every week from pretty much the time that the contractions really started, around 24, 25 weeks. So they were monitoring me really closely. So I never had to actually take the medication.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. My doctor was not monitoring me very closely like that at all. I have complaints about that doctor, but that's for some other time.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like I said, I can definitely relate. I'm sure there's other people that can relate to what you went through. And yeah, the thing that I didn't know about was the postpartum anxiety. I did not know people. I mean, I guess because I'm not familiar myself with anxiety, I've had depression before. So that's why, to me, when people started talking about anxiety, I'm fascinated by it because I don't understand it, and I want to understand it. I want to know how I can help others that are going through it. What would you recommend as someone that has been going through anxiety?
I mean, I was somebody who hadn't really experienced anxiety as an adult, I would say, almost like at all. Jen and I would joke that I was like mellow to like a sociopathic level, like nothing would rattle me prior to pregnancy and all of that. But I also had never heard of postpartum anxiety. I had heard of postpartum depression, and I don't even think I realized that I had postpartum anxiety from my first pregnancy until my second pregnancy. I kind of passed it off as, oh, this must be like a hormone thing. But I remember specifically both pregnancies, I would say pretty directly after birth, within the first 3 months of postpartum was the worst. But it was always related, at least for me, to the baby and their well-being. And so it would be, especially the first time around when you're a new mom and you really, or at least I was really terrified about everything because everything was so foreign and unknown. But it would be something as simple as, you know, a diaper rash. And, you know, then it was like, oh my gosh, you know, my brain would just take over, and it would be like, you know, then they're going to get, it was going to bleed, and then they were going to get an infection, and then I was going to have to give them medication and antibiotics. And then that was going to create thrush in their mouth. And then that was going to affect our breastfeeding. And it was just this constant, like a worst case scenario playing in my head over and over. And I remember, you know, anytime something small would go wrong, I would literally be like, uh-oh. And I could feel it taking over my body, and my heart would pound. And I would say to my husband, like, I hate this. And he would just be like, relax. Like, why are you thinking all these ridiculous thoughts? None of this is going to happen. But I couldn't control it. And especially the first time around, I thought, oh, this is just what it's like to be a new mom. Like, you worry about your baby and you worry about everything. And then the conversation, I think, between my pregnancies, at least like in social media, or at least to my knowledge in social media, changed a little bit to talk a little bit more about postpartum anxiety. And that's when, like you, I realized, oh, this is a thing. And I kind of connected the dots. But Jen can obviously give her perspective from having a little bit of a different experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, I am no stranger to anxiety. I'm definitely the high strung one of the two of us. despite my yoga training, I'm like the most hyper yogi you'll ever meet. But I will say that, yeah, I mean, I dealt with anxiety even prior to becoming a mom, and that's definitely heightened. And I think some of it is normal, right? Especially the first time around, you have no idea what you're doing, and now you're responsible for this little tiny human, and you have to keep them alive. And it's like, okay, and go. And you're like, okay, what do I do? But like Christy said, I think it's with the anxiety, it's no matter what it is, no matter how small or like insignificant it might seem, you always go to worst case scenario for everything. And I noticed too, another thing is it's almost like you get yourself worked up or panicky about something that hasn't even happened. It's like you create the story in your head of something, and then you are reacting to it, and it's just something that you've made up in your head. Like, it's not even reality, and you're upset about it. Like, that's one of the ways I would describe it, or at least that's how it is for me personally. So for example, with my daughter being colicky and being very fussy all the time, and just not an easygoing lady, and we'll be out somewhere and I will be panicking and worrying about like, oh, I have to go before she freaks out, but she's perfectly fine. Like, she'd be content and like smiling, and I'd be like, oh my God. And like, I'd be not enjoying myself because I'm like waiting for the other shoe to drop. I'm waiting for her to have a meltdown. So I can't even be present in that moment and enjoy her being happy because I'm just waiting for her to freak out.
Okay.
I think that was also one of the pivotal moments that I think we all kind of realized that maybe we needed to support Jen a little bit more. Was Jen came over with her kids and her husband. Our husbands are best friends. They actually were best friends before we were friends. People always think it's like the other way around, but they actually have been friends longer. And all of our kids are playing together. I think this was in like June. It was in the spring.
Yeah.
And Jen felt really stressed about her daughter, May, and like napping, and that she was going to freak out, and that she was going to have a like colic fit, or like she was going to have a crying fit. And honestly, it's not funny, but she was like, her daughter was like an angel the whole time. And Jen had a really hard time like enjoying herself. And we have a relationship where like our homes are like each other's homes. So it's not like a situation where, you know, you're at a stranger's house or an acquaintance where you feel a little bit uncomfortable. Like, we go to each other's houses all the time. We're basically like live at each other's houses, and when children allow anyways. And so I think that was kind of like a aha for all of us, Jen included, that like, okay, something else might be going on here because she's fine.
So. Yeah, that's exactly the day that I was picturing in my head when I was saying that, because it was just such a, it's like, yeah, exactly. Like, if you can't relax, it's just like that feeling of not being able to relax and not being able to enjoy the moment or the present, because your head is always just going to that worst case scenario and waiting for something and worrying about something that might not even happen.
And at that time, she was what, like 3 months old?
Maybe about 4, 5, or 6 months old. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So a lot older.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It wasn't just like, oh, like that kind of newborn. I feel like that newborn phase is really, you know, obviously your anxiety is heightened. I almost feel like that's like a biological thing, right? Like your senses are on high alert.
Yes, I agree.
Mm-hmm. But, and then it's like you kind of get past that phase and you should sort of come down a little bit. And when you don't come down, maybe that's a sign that there's something else going on.
Right, because by 5 to 6 months, you should be excited that they're trying to stand up, they're babbling, they're trying to crawl, you know, but for you, you couldn't enjoy that moment.
No, I still have a hard time enjoying her happy moments. Like, she's definitely a lot happier now than she was. And in the beginning, when she was so colicky, she basically just, if she was awake, she was crying. And it sort of, I was never worried about her developmentally. I know, you try not to compare, like, I know you have 5 kids, I think.
Yes, I have 5.
And I'm sure it's harder for, like, hard for you not to compare them all to each other. But even just with comparing her to my son, and I know, like, okay, girls are different than boys, and they're going to have different milestones. And I think, too, with Christy, I would compare Mayuri to Myla a lot, her daughter, because they were even closer in age than our sons are. And, you know, in the beginning, she wasn't reaching, not that she... there was never an issue, but just she wasn't quite like rolling over or crawling as early as I would have perhaps liked her to, or as early as I was used to with my son, that sort of thing. And then just in the last few months, it's like all of a sudden, oh, she's a real baby now. She can, you know, she can crawl and she can stand and she can talk and wave and like coo and whatever, right? And do all those baby things. And I think that was another sort of kind of moment where I realized that I did that there was something else going on with me, because it's like, now I had this baby who was doing all these baby things and not just screaming in my face, and I still couldn't enjoy her. I was still not able to just be present. I was still was feeling all that anxiety and frustration even when she was happy, you know. And that's not, I mean, no mother wants to, like, the baby, I don't want to say season, but I can't think of another word. The baby season is so short, right? You have a year, that's it, where they're a baby. And she's almost, I mean, she's closer to a year than she is to a newborn. And I, you know, sometimes I feel that mom guilt, or that I almost feel like panicky, like I need to enjoy her more. I'm not enjoying her enough, but I'm doing the best that I can. And I've gotten help, and I mean, all I can do is, I can't get that time back, but I can just focus on moving forward, trying to enjoy that more, and just take the time to slow down and just really be present with her.
Well, it sounds like you're doing everything right.
Thanks.
And you're surrounded by the right people too.
Definitely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, no one remembers the first year anyway. You're so sleep deprived that.
That's true. That's true. And I can relate also with a colicky baby because my second baby, which was a girl, also had colic for the first 3 months. And it really is like you're a walking zombie at that point because mm-hmm. they're crying. They're not sleeping. With mine, she would only sleep on the breast, but she wouldn't actually nurse. So when I would take her down, she would start crying. And then I had a parrot that would wake her up and it was just chaos.
Yeah.
And at the time I had a 3-year-old, you know, my oldest was 3 and he's ADHD. So I was going nuts over it. So yeah, I understand what it's like having a colicky baby, but I got lucky that she outgrew it by, I think, the 3rd, 4th month. And then I was able to sleep. But by that time I was here in California, you have to go back to work at 6 weeks. At that time, this was 23 years ago. You went back to work after 6 weeks. Wow. So
unbelievable to us. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. We need more time for sure.
Definitely. Yeah.
I mean, at 6 weeks, you're not, I mean, we were actually just, I think I said this, what I'm about to say exactly on a previous podcast, but it just stuns me because it's like, yeah, you're not even healed. And I think I made the joke, like, you don't even want to get dressed, like, at 6 weeks. Like, you don't even want to put on pants, let alone dressed in work attire.
Exactly. I was wearing a uniform. I couldn't even fit into my uniform.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So how did Cheesecake and crying start? So you guys have been friends for years, and you saw an opportunity to help Jen?
Well, it was funny because we used to, so when we were on mat leave together the first time, we used to get together it was much easier for us to get together with just the one kid. And we would try to meet up for lunch at least once a week. And sometimes, we were each other's village, right? So we would always be calling and texting each other, even if it was 3 a.m, you know, just a vent or whatever. And we were going through, we were both first-time moms, so we're going through everything for the first time together. And we would sort of, yeah, so we'd want to get together and just, like, you know, eat like a dessert, eat something with sugar and get some caffeine into us and like just like lament about everything we're going through. So it got to the point where we would text each other, Cheesecake and crying tomorrow. Like those were our mom dates. It was like code for our mom dates. And then, you know, we tried to sort of do that. We were doing that the second time around, lucky enough to be on mat leave together again. Both of our boys are still in daycare part-time because it's good for them. And also so that we can have that time to bond with our daughters. And then, yeah, we just thought like,
well, were the one that came up with the idea for the podcast. Jen proposed the idea to me, and I'm usually really like sarcastic and cynical about things a little bit at first. And I was kind of like, yeah, that sounds fun. But I have a pretty straight laced job. I work in human resources. And I was kind of like, I don't know if I'm going to like talk about this stuff on a podcast. I was interested in it, but like something was holding me back a little bit. Whereas Jen, by career, is a writer, and she's very like expressive, and she did broadcast journalism. And so this is like totally right up her alley. She's been amazing at it from the start. I was sort of like, I don't know if I can do this. And then she was like, let's just do it. Like, nobody's even really going to listen anyways. Like, it's like, you know, it'll be fun. Like, we have these conversations anyway. Let's just record them and see what happens. And so I was like, okay, fine. And then we did the first one, and it was super fun. And it just kind of went from there. And we were like, you know what? Like, I think I mentioned this when we first started talking was, you know, we're lucky to have each other, and not everybody has that like motherhood tribe or motherhood village or best friend that they can go to. And, you know, motherhood can be kind of lonely if you don't have somebody your husband, of course, if you do have a spouse or your partner or whoever, but they don't understand it the same way that somebody who's been through birth and been through pregnancy and, you know, breastfeeding and all of those things does, as much as they might try. And so we were like, you know, even in our local area, if there's moms that don't have that and we can connect with them, that's one of the cool things about the internet and social media nowadays, is it does give you that platform, I guess, even on a very small scale, to connect with people. And that's kind of how it began.
Yeah, and I think you guys are doing great. I've listened.
Well, it actually, we've been very surprised. We have had a lot more listeners and support than we honestly ever imagined. And so we feel pretty motivated and excited by that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to tell you something. When I first heard of Cheesecake and Crying and I started listening to your podcast, I thought about it and I thought, do they realize that they're the Golden Girls? Have you seen that TV program? It's an old sitcom from the 80s.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I swear this is like the Golden Girls. And so I'm sitting there and I'm enjoying everything that you're talking about. And personally, I know that you do reviews for cheesecake. I'm just a New York cheesecake type of person. I'm just traditional with berries or compote.
That's yes.
Love it.
Compote. Is that how you say it? We were talking about that on a podcast once.
Compote. Yeah, we couldn't figure out how to say it. We were calling it what? Compote?
Yeah. Just jam.
I don't know. I rarely say things correctly, so it might not be, but I think it's compote. Yeah,
I think you're right. I do think you're right.
We're going to go with that. Yeah.
Also, I have to say that I love the Golden Girls, so that I take that as a very large compliment.
Yeah. I love the Golden Girls. I used to watch all the time.
Yeah.
Long live Betty White.
Yes. Yeah, she's a treasure for sure.
Yeah, she's a treasure.
So I know I've been saying it, but please, where can my listeners find you?
We are on Instagram at Cheesecake and Crying, and our podcast link is on our profile. You can also search for us. We're on iTunes, Spotify, all the major platforms. However you listen to your podcasts, you can find us there. We are also on Twitter. The handle's a bit different, though. It's at Cheesecake Crying, no G at the end.
Yes,
only because
Twitter's difficult.
Yeah. Twitter would not allow us to have a full name.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah.
Twitter's okay. Like, we don't care about your branding. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Twitter doesn't care about our branding. They just...
speaking of which, can I tell you another thing? I'm kind of fanning out right now, but I love your colors. Like the way that you guys have your colors, the yellow and the pink, like those are my favorite colors. And the way you did your branding, I love it. I like it a lot.
Thanks. Yeah. It also seems kind of a throwback to the 80s, sort of.
Yes.
We're 80s babies. So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having us. This has
been great.
It's great to be on the other side of the mic.
Yeah, this is the first time we've been on another podcast. So this was really awesome and exciting for us.